Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. We are going to be going to Wellness Wednesday shortly, but so stay tuned for that. As I say, we've got a bit of live music on the way and catching up on some of your comments and what have you. Hi, Greg. In relation to the comments earlier that the Protect Our Women narrative is racist and similar to the Jim Crow era in the US, the statistics on sexual crime in the UK released by the UK Ministry for Justice clearly show that immigrants are 71% more likely to commit sexual crimes, including rape, than UK nationals. Indeed, I've seen those figures. Thank you for that. Greg, I never took much notice of young bands, but NICAP have really done themselves a great disadvantage by highlighting the killing of innocent people by US and Israel. Looks like US have to come home from supporting Israel with the tail between the legs, just like Vietnam. And it's a it's one of those interesting ones in that I think, you know, they were going great guns and their message was resonating and they had that platform. I think it's just obviously when they started rattling cages, the internet never forgets. And then we had a situation, didn't we, whereby we had their comments about Tory MPs and also Hamas, etc. All right, okay. On this morning's Wednesday, Wellness Wednesday, we talked to Nolene Devenny, who's Interim Services Manager at the Donegal Sexual and Abuse the Abuse and Rape Crisis Centre. Thank you much for joining me, Nolene. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
I was reading in the papers this morning and I commented that every time I read it, I do be taken aback, but I think people hearing it for the first time might find it hard to believe that currently counselling notes, so someone who's the victim of a gender-based attack, gender-based violence, their private counselling notes can then be used as evidence against them potentially in any criminal case. It is really quite as stark as that, isn't it? And perhaps you can tell us a little more.
Yes, it is. It's particularly cruel. I suppose it's one of the cruel aspects of the judicial system, which is particularly cruel to victims of sexual violence. So the counsel notes are accessible by the DPP, which is the public prosecutor, who will be prosecuting in the case. And the victim then is called as a witness to the crime, which is even quite difficult in itself. And I suppose if you look at the whole process of sexual violence, you know, it's a violation of your body and your mind. And then to go through that process of going to SATU and having your examination and then go through the whole the process of reporting to the guards. And then you feel that you're ready to work on this and see and, you know, go through the counselling process and look at some way of repair and recovering, that you are going into that space with your counsellor that you develop a therapeutic relationship with. And it's really important that that is protected. At the minute, the DPP can request access and the person can give consent. They can also not give consent, and in that instance then it goes to the judge and then the judge decides. So if you
down for a counselling session, probably after, and I'm sure after one of the most, if not the most traumatic experience of your life, it must be very hard to open up and get the full benefit of counselling if you're made aware that I must note that I have to retain these notes and these notes could be potentially used against you in any criminal case. A, how honest would you be in your healing process? But B, you know, you might do the counselling, but say, well, I ain't going through a trial then. Is this why we see so few people who are the perpetrators of these crimes not being found criminally liable for them or never even seeing a day in court?
Absolutely. It's a deterrent. You know, lots of people would come into our service and we are very mindful of how we process our counselling notes, and we're very mindful of how we explain this to the clients when they come into the service. But even, I suppose, we have a new, it's Dr. Stephanie O'Keefe, she's the head of the Cooen agency now, which is a new agency we're part of, and she has come out and said that she is aware that counsellors are very mindful of how they retain their notes. So we are very clear in that when you come to us that it is a safe space, although there will be that, there may be that request of access to notes, that how we kind of process that and how we work through it. The client always has an opportunity to read through her notes or his notes before it is sent to the DPP.
Okay, that'd be can information then be redacted at that point?
So at that point, that goes to the DPP, and then they decide. So they would make the decision then what is relevant. So it has to be pertinent to the case.
I presume so then there must be a legal obligation, is there, to retain notes then? Because if I were a councillor and I was dealing with a person like this, I'd have, and I probably shouldn't, I'd have one piece of paper where stuff that would not be problematic, and I'd have a second piece of paper whereby I needed to keep notes of personal information to work through a person's crisis.
We would, we are legally going to keep notes for all our clients, and we retain them for up to 7 years. After that, then they're destroyed. But the system that we are working with is particularly difficult for our clients, and not even just in terms of the note taking and note keeping and access to notes, but we have people who are waiting to go to court for up to 8 years, Greg, and that's an awful long time. And if you have been working through this and trying to repair and recover, you're waiting those 8 years. You can't move on. It's very, very difficult because every maybe a year or 2 years, you're asked to come into court. So you're bringing it all back to mind. You're bringing it all back from your memory. Mm-hmm. And you're reliving it because you're trying to remember your statement and you're trying to recall all the facts. You're not allowed to forget.
No, and that passage of time can be exploited as well. I mean, can you be sure how many drinks you had on that night? You know, not that that is a factor, but unfortunately, you read cases, and that's the kind of stuff that's put to victims, and it's re-traumatizing, isn't it? And then, you know, the actual aim is to muddle people, catch them in their own words and stuff. Like, it's really quite a horrific. I can only imagine. Actually, it's really quite a horrific experience. Do we know, Nolene, of those that come for support? A rough percentage of those then that do decide to pursue matters criminally? Because it's very important to note that seeking help and support from the Donegal Sexual Abuse and Rape Crisis Centre does not necessarily trigger that type of a criminal process.
Absolutely not. When you come to us, you come anonymously, and we are an opportunity for you to work through. So we are a counselling service, Greg, but we're also a support service. So about roughly maybe 40% of the referrals we would get through every year proceed with counselling. Yeah. But then your other 60% are here for support and guidance. And that's for people who've experienced sexual violence, but it's also for their supporters. It's really, really important for the mummies and the daddies and family members, your brothers, sisters, you know, that they get that support. But it enables them then to go on then and support the victim of the sexual violence.
Look, I mean, obviously, sorry, I beg your pardon. Continue, Nolene. I thought you were finished.
No, you do not have to report to the guards whenever you come here. That's definitely very much your choice.
Yeah, but what you are doing, though, is you are potentially logging, you know, evidence, be it physical or verbal. The earlier you go for support, I presume that information then is sort of locked in, if I can put it like that, at the centre, allowing the victim space then to decide how they proceed.
Yeah, absolutely. And a big part of the whole counselling process is, and I said this earlier, is repair and recovery. So if you think about who the perpetrators are, the majority of the time it's someone you know, and someone that you would recognise, or a person of power. So over 70% is someone we know. And if you take into consideration that there's an emotional attachment the majority of the time to the person, so people are really working through that, you know, our rational side and our emotional side and how we kind of manage that. So if you think about the counselling process, it's not talking about the person per se, it's about the impact on your life. Yeah. And that's the crucial part of it. It's how this experience of sexual violence impacts me on a day-to-day basis, and how can I manage that? How can I repair from this? How can I recover, and how can I move on? And that's what we're, I suppose, arguing for, is that these notes are not about the perpetrator. It's nothing to do with that person exactly. It's about how we are recovering, how we're moving forward. Mm. And that's not relevant. Relevant to any case.
And if it is relevant to a defence, you would make you wonder the angle they're coming at it from, if I could put it like that. you know, obviously there's various bills come before the Dáil, and some of them are very politically divisive, be it housing or whatever it might be. You would hope, wouldn't you, that this bill being brought forward by Ruth Coppinger TD would not be resisted, that it would get you know the support required for it to progress. Yeah. Because, as I say, there's no political mileage in this. I think anyone looking at this realises that it's ridiculous, unless there's an angle I'm missing. Jim O'Callaghan seems pretty favourable towards it. One would hope that this is the next step in this practice being removed from the court system.
Yeah, absolutely. We would love to see that happen. And actually, we would think all political parties would be on board with this. This is not this is nothing that should be divisive. This should be very straightforward, that is, they should not be allowed to be used. It's not even just the use of them, it's who is seeing this. You know that, yes, your DPP is seeing it. There's a possibility your defence is seeing it. But, you know, this is very personal, private information that, you know, it doesn't have any relevance to the act that happened. It's the impact of it. It's what's happening thereafter. But even in terms of, you know, the whole system I mentioned earlier, the length of time it actually gets to go to trial, you're talking up to 8 years, sometimes 9 years. I had a lady, and it was 9 years to the day that the guy was being sentenced. That's an awful long time out of someone's life that you're asking them to put on hold. You're asking them to pause, you know. You're not allowing the person to move forward. You're asking them to constantly have to recollect. And then even when you're in the court system, you're sitting in. Like, I had a person who was asked to stand up and identify herself in the court. You know, that's quite difficult. But the perpetrator wasn't asked to stand up, you know. And there's an unfairness in the system and how the victim is treated. It really isn't. It isn't out there to support the victim, you know. So we would be looking even for, you know, the government to try and expedite these trials in some way to make it a bit quicker, that we can get through this process a lot quicker than it is at the minute.
And, you know, neither you nor I, certainly not you, and certainly not I actually, would want to do anything to discourage anyone from you know, pursuing action against someone that committed a crime against them. But in highlighting the problems in an attempt to try and get them addressed, they're so bad, invariably that might happen. And it's one of those, isn't it? We have to talk about it, Nolene, but in exposing the hurdles one must jump through to get justice, you know, some might say, I don't want to commit that 8 years potentially to my life. So it's a catch 22, but we still have to continue to talk. And I think it's conversations that have got the progress in relation to the counselling notes, and we'll see where else we go.
I think it's really important that we are not trying to dissuade anybody from reporting. It's really important that if that's the that's the process, that they will, we will fully support them to go down that way. And we work very closely with the DPSU in Donegal and with SATU, and it's really important that there is a lot of support around that. The difficulty is the time. That's it. That's all we're saying. We would support anybody that wants to go and seek the justice. But there's two types of justice in this as well, Greg. You know, you have the judicial system that offers that kind of justice, but you also have personal justice, and that comes from that repair and recovery, and that comes through coming to your centre and seeking the counselling and looking after yourself and prioritising yourself and taking that control back. And that's a different type of justice, and they don't always go hand in hand, but you do need both. I think sometimes you need the two of them. Yeah.
Okay. Nolene, thank you for your time this morning. Just to remind people, if they want to access your services, and it doesn't have to be something that happened, you know, today, if they want to access your services and just speak to someone as it relates to sexual abuse or rape, how do they make contact?
They can call us. The number is 074-912-8211. And that's for anyone that has experienced sexual violence, but that's for their supporters too. One of the greatest predictors of an outcome after sexual violence is having a positive supporter around you, Greg. So for all, even the friendship groups, you know that that's really, really crucial, that you have people around you that can shore you up. There's one other thing, we have time, Greg. We're actually, this is off the topic completely, but we're renovating our offices at the minute. And we're just trying to change the space So we're looking for anybody that would have any arts they'd like to contribute.
Okay.
I think it's lovely that we would have some of our clients' art in the office, but it would be nice also to have anybody that would like to support the service, that they could display their art in here, and if anybody even like to volunteer some art, that would be lovely.
All right, okay, that's an interesting one. So, as you heard from Nolene, they are rejigging the offices, and obviously as you walk in, first impressions, and if you have any art that you wish to donate, they'd be happy. Is it a different number for people to reach out to you in relation to that?
No, same number. It all comes through to the one switchboard, yeah.
Okay, lovely stuff. Thank you so much, Nolene. Go ahead.
No, but if someone doesn't want to call the number, because it can be quite difficult, mm-hmm. they can also email us as well, and we can respond then via email. The email is info@donegalbabecrisis.ie.
Okay. Thank you so much indeed, Nolene Deveny there. John was a member of the Citizens Assembly, and I think this topic came up in discussions. John, good morning to you.
It did. It came up all on what it was. The Assembly was on gender equality, and one of the topics was violence, sexual violence and violence towards women, and also, to an extent, not as much now to men, because it did happen, but more prominently women. Now, we had a very in-depth discussion on it, and we made several representations and recommendations, and we met with 8 TDs in Dáil Éireann and a committee and put them to them. And they were told, I told them myself, that this will probably end up on a shelf gathering dust. And we got to know the Labour leader. She'd just been appointed. Bacachek, I think they call her.
Yep.
And I discovered that she was a lawyer. And I says, right, the possibilities that you could be in government, and the possibilities that if you are, that you'd become maybe the Minister for Justice. What are you going to do regarding sentences for these crimes, when the judges are handing out probation act or sending them out on community work, instead of giving them good stuff sentences and sending out the message that this is not tolerated? Back in the 60s, it was come on from the pub a few drinks, I had to bite the slap and that's it. Those days are gone. We thought they were gone. But the lack of commitment and determination from various politicians is disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. They know what's going on. They know what's going on. And you have to ask the question, is it in their interest not to push this?
Yeah, because I think you must then at this point, you know, you've got together, it's the Citizens Assembly, you made your recommendations and obviously, you know, put the points across very strongly, and yet you're of the view nothing has happened. So what is the function of the Assembly?
Nothing has happened. Nothing. They just paid lip service to it, and that was it. And believe it or not, these discussions of that assembly is 100 people throughout the country, and was held in the height of COVID online.
Yeah.
Online, and we did meet up in the Grand Hotel, I think it was in Malahide a few times, and we got our recommendations, what we had, and put them down on paper, and met with the 8 TDs in Dáil Éireann one Wednesday morning at 11 o'clock and presented it to them. Now, there were TDs there from all parties, and the commitment from them was great. Oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. But they were told, like most assembly recommendations, they'll be put on the shelves because they don't want to act on them. And that's just what they've done.
Yeah, very frustrating, because there's quite a bit of emotional commitment, if nothing else, into that process.
Yes, the only time they'll act on something like that is when some, God forbid me for saying it, when some mother is seriously injured, then they'll come down. But then when it goes to court, or some good dooder will stand up and say, it was a drink problem, they had a drink problem, and they come from a broken family and all that, and then they're put on community service. That's not good enough anymore. It's not. We've got to waken up and recognise this has been going on for generations, and it's got to stop.
Mm-hmm. All right, okay, John. Listen, a strong voice, a strong advocate. Thank you for your time. We'll be back with more after a short break. Brendan O'Connor, the former president of the GRA, joins us on the programme now. And, of course, the Garda representation, Garda, the GRA delegate conference is ongoing. Good morning to you, Brendan. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg.
I took interest in all of the conversations so far, but particularly those that are charged with investigating fatal road traffic collisions or road traffic collisions with serious injury. And Donegal featured in that conversation. Really surprised to learn there's only 11 of these people that are available to cover the entire 26 counties. And of course, we've seen a couple of cases, and one potentially recently, where it leaves potential evidence being lost with the best will in the world, and also long road closures because the team is spread so thinly.
Yes, Greg, a familiar tale, obviously, crossing guys in relation to training and availability. And of course, the situation is exacerbated in Donegal because we're so far away and we don't have neighbouring divisions. So, yeah, look at it. It's a very stressful time for families that are bereaved and communities, and it just adds to the problem, as you said, with extensive road closures, and we can see that can interrupt the social and economic life of communities. So certainly it's something that we're saying needs to be properly resolved, a proper protocol too, because there's a kind of a very haphazard way we start ringing around trying to get someone to come and deal with it when it happens, and it's just not satisfactory. So a very strong support in Donegal for that particular motion, all right, and call for proper training and proper protocol for mobilise it. And as you say, it's important that families get justice and the victims get justice. I mean, road traffic collisions can be a criminal matter, and it's vital that the proper evidence is gathered, and that can be affected by time delays and weather in exposed places. Like, and we're all familiar with the climate in Donegal and leaving stuff like can be the elements can interfere, but certainly it's a big problem.
There's a lot going on, almost too many issues to go through one by one, but I do wonder how close to the tipping point are we from a rank and file perspective, Brendan, between, you know, new operating models, payments for those coming into the force, support for those in the force, payments, working hours. Like, it seems every year the list of issues gets longer and resolutions seem fewer and far between. So at what point are Gardaí going to say, right, enough is enough, I wonder? Do you get a sense of that at the conference?
Yeah, I think absolutely, Greg. I think that was very much, that was a phrase that came up again and again. Yesterday was enough is enough. And I suppose it was particularly interesting from a Donegal perspective with hearing the experience around the country for the operating policing model, which was introduced in Donegal on Monday morning. And the feedback from around the country is that this is an abject failure and that it has absolutely decimated community policing. And that certainly is a concern that we would have had at Donegal going into the process. And as you say, the list gets longer and it seems that, you know, we hate to be seen as a whinge fest. But as you say, unfortunately, nothing gets resolved. We would say the level of engagement is not what it should be. And that's why the list gets longer. But certainly it seems that there isn't proper the feedback isn't being listened to. It's been received from Garda headquarters and the Department of Justice, but they keep planning on. As they say, Donegal was the second last division in the country to roll out this model. So we would have expected it to be a very streamlined process and it would be a very easy transition in Donegal. But there's actually absolute chaos behind the scenes and nobody really knows what's going on or what the plan is. And it's just unacceptable. And we can see that from the inside. So for the public to rely on policing, it certainly should be concerned. And what is happening in Donegal is a very retrograde step. The public knows, everyone in Garda Síochána knows that the only people that seem that won't acknowledge that are Garda headquarters and the department who are insisting that this model is a step forward. It's not a step forward. And the levels of cover and the access to senior leadership within the county has been reduced significantly.
Yeah, if I happen to have a conversation with Gardaí out and about, and this isn't any Gardaí that are associated with this programme, they will express frustration in that, you know, everybody knows what the issues are, everybody's talking about them, but Gardaí aren't being listened to because maybe management or government say, well, sure, what are they going to do? Why do we need to listen to them? How are they going to... they can huff and they can puff. They're going to sound like a bag of moaners to the public. We don't really need to do anything because it's just the guards. I don't mean that in any way disrespectful, but some members I've spoken to feel that that's the way it is. You'll grin and bear it because Gardaí grin and bear it. That's what you do.
Well, as you said about the tipping point, but one of the motions that came forward as an urge motion and it came from Donegal yesterday was in relation to the EU presidency, because in the latter half to 2026, Ireland's assuming the EU presidency, and there are hundreds of events that will require policing and a huge commitment from our members. And what our members have told us yesterday and our delegates is, do you know what? Maybe the goodwill, the flexibility that we've shown to date that isn't reciprocated by our managers, by
going to be turned off. We've directed Ops the board, as the leadership team in the GRA, not to engage with in management in relation to planning of these events. So that will focus the minds and maybe just make people aware that, you know, don't take us for granted. Don't take our flexibility and commitment because, as I say, we want to contribute. We've always done what's asked us, but it's just not reciprocated. We don't feel respected. We don't feel valued, and we just feel under attack. And as I say, under attack, not from the criminals, but actually from our own regime and our own leaders and our own oversight. And something just has to change. And I think, as you said, we've reached that tipping point and people are saying enough is enough and people are just becoming despondent.
Okay, thanks very much for that. Brendan O'Connor, former president of the Garda Representative Association. Line not great at times, but I think you got the thrust there of what Brendan was saying. Look what happened in England, says a listener, after Brexit and a lot of the immigrants left by the way, my children are immigrants in different countries around the world. This is why Brexit's seen by a failure is most. One of the big issues of Brexit was for Britain to regain control of its borders. Well, it actually hasn't. In fact, illegal immigration, the boats and all that kind of stuff got worse. But when the English go somewhere, they're not migrants, they're expats, don't you know? The councillors are acting very smug now that they're elected, but they aren't listening to the people, says a listener. Another, as per the council statement yesterday, there are 2,071 people seeking asylum in Donegal. 892 of them are children. Kim McMenamin is right. Bottom line is there is a massive cultural shift in Europe and Ireland's Western society. Stopped having children. Islam is taking over. Sharia law, etc. will be on our doorstep in the next 10 to 20 years. And like that is a view that J.D. Vance had. J.D. Vance actually said, and he's elected the Vice President of the United States, by the way. So just in case people think this is only coming from concerned citizens on the ground, or that's how they might discuss themselves. J.D. Vance described Britain as the first, it will become the first Islamic country to have nuclear weapons. Elon Musk, who's got the ear of Donald Trump, is also been, as has Donald Trump, been incredibly critical of Europeans' immigration policy. So there are people at the highest of offices and running the most influential media companies that are saying the same things as people are saying, but being labelled as being right. Well done to Greg Hughes handling this interview very well from a concerned listener regarding Saturday's gathering. I really hope there is no trouble. If Conor McGregor is speaking, please, this march should be cancelled. I can't believe I'm hearing this man is coming to our town. Kim used the word unsavoury and then praises McGregor. As I said, there were posters at that demonstration last week of Donald Trump, Elon Musk and Vladimir Putin as heroes. Now, I'm not saying everyone had one. There was one picture of one. But it's funny that McGregor has become sort of like the unofficial sort of leader, I think. Because, I mean, I don't think I'm speaking out of turn because Kim said that if he came up, he would instantly be installed as the keynote speaker. I can't separate Conor McGregor from his actions, not just the civil case. There's much more than that. I can't disassociate someone from those type of actions and then saying, but what they're saying is true. Maybe that's fine, but I personally can't take anything he tells seriously because even just the incident with the older gentleman in the pub that was caught on CCTV, that alone. A majority of people coming into the country, but if these few that step out the line cause trouble, etc., they should be sent on the first place home, like Australia, no messing. Well, you see, that's what lots of people, even people from minority communities, believe. There's no way we should be shouting abuse at anyone, yet those who cause trouble should be deported the same way any Irish citizen who commits a crime, they should be jailed. But already, I mean, if you hear on Saturday, by the way, if you hear, according to Kim, and I'm just saying this is because this is what was said, if you hear send them home, they're talking about, I can't remember what he said they were talking about. They're not talking about the refugees, or if it's Ireland is full, they're talking about services. They're not actually talking about refugees. So obviously there's a level of anticipation of what is to come. I work in ED and we don't have time to be standing drinking coffee. Could she not get the old man a cup of tea? Was she sick, says the listener. There's a tea morning in aid of Alzheimer's Ireland in Grace O'Brien's house in Ballywarsky in Fannett. It's on the 1st of May from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Everyone's welcome. And Marie Quinn in Lifford, happy birthday. And also, it's our 50th wedding anniversary. Lots of love from John. Wow, what a brilliant milestone to reach, John and Mary, or Marie. Congratulations to both. John, I'm sure you've played your role in keeping things going. A big happy birthday to Marie Quinn in Lifford. And also, I'll wish a happy wedding anniversary, a 50th wedding anniversary to John and Marie in Lifford as well. Okay, we've got some live music coming up for you. John and Fiona Trotter, they're a father and daughter duo. They're performing at the Jazz opening event in the Guild Hall and at a number of events over the weekend. I'll come to them in a moment, but first I want to say hello to Aisling McCallion, City of Derry Jazz Festival Coordinator with the Derry City and Strabane District Council. A tough job, but you must love it.
It is. I love it. Exciting job. A lot of hard work the last few weeks, but well worth it, Greg.
This festival now has been running. This is its 24th year, is it? And it's really found its feet. It's really established itself as a key event on the circuit.
Yep, this is our 24th year this year, and we're attracting about over 100,000 people annually. So it's really grown and grown over the last few years. And this year, we have an incredible lineup this year. So we're hoping this year is going to be as successful.
People might have sort of a preconceived notion of what jazz music is. Do you know what I mean? Maybe they know a couple of very famous jazz songs and not realise that many of these songs that they know fall in the church of jazz.
Yep, definitely. But the beauty of our festival is that it isn't just jazz. We've a mix of everything, something for everyone. We've got blues, swing, we've a bit of funk, soul, everything in between. So no matter what you're into, if you have a look through the programme, you'll have something you can come and enjoy this weekend.
All right. So how is the event run? So where is their music, and is there sort of a key focal area for your headliners?
So there is, we've a few jazz hubs in and around the city with the Pure Jazz. So the Playhouse, Bennigan's, we've our headliner this year in the Millennium Forum. That's Billy Ocean. And then Una Healy from the Saturdays, along with Luke Thomas, they're playing in St. Collins Hall. And then we have over 60 venues then in and around the city centre, bars, hotels, where there's lots of free jazz gigs. We also have two outdoor stages, Guildhall Square and the Craft Village, running Saturday and Sunday, as well as in the Guildhall as well, in the main hall. Lots of music on Saturday and Sunday in there as well.
Is there a place where people can go and organise what they're going to do for the weekend? Because we can't do it justice because there's so much stuff, right? It's all over the place. And I don't mean that in any way negatively. Yeah. So people might want to plan their gigs for the weekend.
We have over 400 gigs, so there's a lot happening. But there, we have a jazz trail on the website. We've listings with everything there. You can go and plan your trail on our website, citydairyjazzfestival.com. You can download the trail, save it to your phone, save a few favourites then that you want to go see.
All right, brilliant stuff. And where do people get all the info?
So on the website, cityofderryjazzfestival.com.
All right, brilliant stuff. We're going to hear some jazz now, so I don't want to be distracted, so I'm going to say goodbye.
Yeah, thanks very much,
Greg. Take care of yourself, because John and Fiona Trotter are with us. Fiona, good morning to you.
Good morning.
How are you getting on? You love the early gigs. I've heard that. Your preference is the earlier in the morning.
The earlier the better.
Yeah, because that's when your voice is just at its best.
Exactly.
How long have you, John and Fiona, been performing together?
Oh, gee, when Fiona had a ballet dancing career, and when she stopped, how long was that ago?
About 20-something years ago.
20 years ago, and she wondered what to do, and I took her into the music room, and I made her into a jazz singer, which is what she is now.
And how long have you been performing jazz, John?
Let me see. I started performing in jazz groups when I was 11.
Wow.
And I'm 83.
Unbelievable. So that's 72
years. 71 years I'm doing it.
Wow, fantastic.
So I should be able to do it now.
Yeah, exactly. And what were you doing at 11, John?
I was a jazz accordionist.
Right.
At 11, yeah. Okay. Piano accordion.
Yeah.
I used to follow a guy called Art Van Dam, an American-Dutch jazz accordionist, and he was something else.
Mm.
You know? Then I was in this band called the Derry City Show Band, and mm-hmm. Mr. Frank McLaughlin, who gave me a job, and I bought a trombone, And I'm a jazz trombonist ever since, you know.
Wow.
So I put in a lot of work in that, you know.
Of all the people that you've worked through over the years, and I mean, I presume your seeding experience to them, but I imagine, you know, every band you performed with, every gig that you went, you must always be absorbing styles and notes and...
Well, it's a long story. I started off playing the accordion in Scottish dance bands.
Right.
Playing Strathspeys and stuff like that. And then I come back here and I was playing in the Derry City Band. And then I took up jazz trombone. I was in New York for 30 odd years.
Mm.
And I learned a lot of stuff there, you know. I learned a lot of like Irish stuff. Italian, Jewish, and lately I've taken to singing songs, you know, like Cuban songs and Brazilian songs. So I do a few of them.
Brilliant.
And I sing in Yiddish as well.
Okay.
But the singer's here.
Yes, of course, indeed. I know, but it's just a fascinating story in and of its yourself, as is yours, Fiona. What did you say? Ballet,
yes.
Ballet to jazz.
Yep.
Ballet jazz.
Ballet jazz.
Do you always know you had a voice?
Not really, no, because I really concentrated solely on dancing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it is quite a demanding, you have to, like, you know.
Mm.
Really sacrifice a lot of your childhood, and, you know, because you're constantly going to competitions. You know, anybody that's into dancing, like even with the Irish dancing and stuff like that, they have that similar work ethic.
It's a discipline, isn't
yes,
there?
Yes, yeah. The discipline, yeah. You have to have.
It's like, you know, boxing, even if you wanted to transition it to sport,
yeah,
or athletics.
And then,
yeah,
you know, you also have to, like, at the time I had to leave Northern Ireland because I had to finish my education.
Mm.
I couldn't do that in Ireland, so I had to go to London to finish off my education and then go on to the
So it's
company.
Like two separate careers, really. One,
yeah,
just followed the
next.
Yeah,
more or less like my second career.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Obviously, you're performing a number of gigs over the course of the weekend, but do you, like, is there something you say, I have to go and see that?
Well, you mean not our gigs? Or
no,
like
your gigs. Everyone has to go and see your gigs, but because obviously you're a musician and a performer and entertainer, right? But you're also a consumer. So is there any shows that you don't want to miss that aren't your own?
Oh gosh, this is the tough question, you see, because if I start mentioning people and I don't mention the other person, yeah, I'm going to be
okay,
in trouble.
You know what? John, are you more comfortable to answer that one? I think you're going to be trying to find out the more obscure. I get that impression from you, maybe.
Well, if I had a choice to go and see anyone, it would be everybody.
Yes.
Because everyone has this little bit to offer. Yeah.
What a fantastic answer, John. Brilliant. Okay. But tea at time to think, Fiona, you see.
Yeah,
I put it straight on you. Okay, we're going to hear two bits. What's the first one?
We're going to do a song originally recorded by Ella Fitzgerald, and this one is with Louis Armstrong. So we're going to do a tune called Cheek to Cheek.
Lovely. Whenever you're ready.
Right, okay. Here we go.
Ella?
Yeah, Louie.
We're gonna do a duet.
That's if I can remember the words.
You're gonna sing the lead.
Okay.
And I'm gonna do the obligation.
Well, here we go.
Heaven, I'm in heaven. And my heart beats so that I can hardly speak. And I seem to find the happiness I see when we're out together dancing cheek to cheek.
Heaven, I'm in heaven, and the cares that all surround me through the week seem to vanish like a gambler's lucky streak when we're out together dancing cheek to cheek.
Oh, I'd love to climb a mountain and reach the highest peak, but I don't enjoy it half as much as dancing cheek to cheek.
Well, I like to go out fishing in the middle of the week, but it never thrills me half as much as dancing cheek to cheek.
Come on and dance with me, I want my arms around you, the charms of you two will carry me through. speak, and I seem to find the happiness I seek. When we're out together dancing, out together dancing, out together dancing cheek to cheek.
Cheek. No, that was one. I couldn't get the smile off my face. I was smiling like an agent. That well, was good. Lovely.
That's the whole effect.
Oh, no, no, it's all positive. Don't get me wrong. Absolutely wonderful how you and you got down deep there. Could you got down that deep, John, when you were 30, I wonder?
What's that?
Could you have got down that deep when you were 30? Vocally.
Well, no.
I think you're using all of your advantages now. Absolutely amazing. Listen, we're going to hear another one from you, Fiona. Do you have off the top of your head where you're performing at the weekend?
Yes, well, we're doing the opening on Thursday. That's at the Guildhall.
Tomorrow, yeah.
Yes, and then, Daddy, you're in the sandwich company.
I'm in the sandwich company on Friday with a lady called Anna. She's Rohan Armstrong
and Anna.
Anna Armstrong. You know, and we're in, where are we in?
Saturday we're in Shipkey Hotels. That's from 6 till 8 p.m. And then a friend of mine, Ursula and Dee Dee, are going to be doing a show in the Edmonton Hotel, which we will be doing a promo of a song we've just written and performed in the studio called Sweet Sugar Daddy. So we're going to be doing that with them. It's a bit risque, so we couldn't do it on the radio. So
I love risque, but anyway, I'll trust you.
And then on Sunday, we're doing 6 till 8 at the Ebrington. And then Sunday night, we're in the Nacional de Cuba, and that's 10 till 12. So it's 6 to 8 at the Ebrington on Sunday, then 10 till 12 at the Nacional de Cuba, which we're going to be doing like jazz and blues in the first half, and then we're going to be doing like full-on salsa music.
Wowzers, okay, yeah. Brilliant stuff. You love it, do you, Fiona?
Oh, absolutely. The performing. Yeah, yeah, because even though the transition between dancing and singing, it's like normally would you just be using your body, you know, to tell the story. So all the songs are different stories.
But you're still storytelling.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So it's just
a different area for the arts.
The vocals.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. I just can imagine the connections that you make and maybe jam sessions and all this kind of stuff. It must just be a wonderful community to be a part of.
Yeah, it is beautiful.
Yeah, okay.
Listen, you've asked us some very important questions and we appreciate it. Thank you very much, Greg. Thank you.
I'm waiting for the bot, John. No?
No,
are we good? We're good? Listen, Fiona, what are you going to sing for us next?
We'd like to do a nice ballad for you now. This one is a really well-known tune. It was originally recorded by a lady called Dinah Washington, but we're going to do our own arrangement of it, and this one's called What a Difference a Day Makes.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'll thank them again just before we let them go. But this is John and Fiona Trotter. They're performing together and with others over the weekend. And if this hasn't put you in the mood to heading into Derry to sample some of the jazz, blues and other genres of music, I don't know what will. Okay. John and Fiona Trotter, take it away.
Thanks, Greg.
What a difference a day makes. 24 little hours brought the sun and the flowers. Where there used to be day was blue, dear. Today I'm a part of you, dear. My lonely nights are through, dear. Since you said you were mine. What a difference a day makes. the rainbow before me, skies above can't be stormy. Since that moment of bliss, that thrilling kiss, it's heaven when you find romance on your menu. What a difference a day makes, yeah, and the difference is you.
Doubt your training has given you breath for days, Fiona. You have an unfair advantage, I think, over many people. I wouldn't be surprised. Listen, John, thank you so much. It's been wonderful having you in and hearing you try and steal the show there. You know, very close.
Very close. Thank you for
thanks so
thanks
much
for having
enjoy
us,
your
Greg.
Weekend, John, please.
Oh yeah,
I'm sure
will.
You will, and you too, Fiona.
Thank you so much.
And people can we'll remind people of when you are playing over the weekend. But a real treat for you. That's John and Fiona Trotter, and they're a father and daughter duo performing at the opening of the jazz event in the Guild Hall and at a number of events over the weekend. And that's all part of the City of Derry Jazz Festival. We spoke to its coordinator a little earlier on, Aisling McKellion. Thank you to all of you. Right, that's where we have to leave it on the show today. Thank you so very much for bearing with us. As you know, it's the type of show we cover everything. You know, we've been speaking about alopecia. We've been platforming people's views ahead of protests and counter-protests on Saturday. And we brought you some amazing music from an amazing father and daughter duo. You get it all here. I know some of you don't like all of it all of the time, dependent on what the topic is, but we really appreciate your support. And we're back to do it all again tomorrow morning from 9.